Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and I am so jazzed to be talking about BIM and all the stuff around building informational modeling. And we get to have one of the legends talking about that and going to have a lot of great lessons learned. And this is all about tied into our partnership with Digital Built Week, where we're going down through those silos that we're always talking about together and how we can use technology to build better buildings. And our experience is when you go into the A silo or the architecture, this is where the BIM or the building informational modeling is most established. And there are so many great things happening in that space. But the AEC, it's the C silo and the warriors, the subcontractors. And that's what we need to talk about, the leading, the change and implementing so that these silos can all come together and industry-wide really take BIM to the next level. So today I want to explore the everyday uses of building informational modeling for the trades that we call the warriors, the craftspeople, contractors, and our affiliates who may not be using it right now. And so BIM has all sorts of uses beyond just that giant commercial projects. And we're going to challenge Brian Mackey, who we get to talk through about some of his project. And he's a Colorado Revit expert, and we're going to get into some of that stuff. And so make sure at the show notes, if you're not going to Digital Built Week and joining us in Anaheim or on the fence about it, we're giving away free passes to Digital Built Week here in 2022 in Anaheim, June 14th to 16th. So go to our podcast page, just at our website, theaoc.us, fill out your form, the chance to meet Brian and I there. So Brian Mackey is here right here in good old Denver, Colorado, and he is a BIM engineer and has been around, and we're super excited. And he's going to be speaking at Digital Built Week. And the title that he's going to be speaking there is Everyday Revit Tips We All Wish We Had Discovered Years Ago. So without further ado, let's get in and talk with Brian Mackey of Mackey Consulting. Lock and load, tribe. What's your favorite beverage?
For anybody who knows me, it's always iced tea.
Iced tea. All right. What's a favorite place you've traveled?
I would just say unexpectedly, it was probably we went to Portugal.
Ooh, give us one story of that.
Well, we were speaking at Built Europe years ago, and we decided to stop in Portugal one year, and the conference was there, and we went down to southern Portugal, northern Portugal. Great people, really inexpensive country, and just really enjoyed just hanging out there for the few weeks we were there. It was a great trip.
Awesome. Do you have one story or one specific experience from that comes to mind?
Yeah, we ended up staying and found like a little bed and breakfast, and we're only people stayed there. We went there, you know, us Americans don't have the history that they have in Europe. So when we went there, we stayed at this old castle that had been converted, you know, not like a giant castle or anything. We actually stayed in like the guards tower. It was two stories. We could get up on the roof, but it was also a chestnut plantation. So they were harvesting chestnuts the week we happened to be there. We were literally the only guests in this, like, you know, 100-acre site. It was just a really great time.
Awesome. And what do you like to do when you're not in the BIM world, solving all this awesome technology stuff? What is your favorite hobby or interest outside of the construction silos we've been talking about breaking down that we passionately call the art of construction?
You know, I'm just a tinker around the house, tinker with kids stuff, you know, do all the dad responsibilities and do all that kind of tinkering. So nothing specific, favorite hobby, just more of a tinker with everything kind of guy.
Awesome. Well, before you got into BIM, what is your origin story into construction?
Well, for me, I was fortunate enough to have a high school that actually had a trades program. So in my high school, they actually had a carpentry class, a masonry class, as well as an electrical class. And the district that I worked for, they went in and bought an entire block where all the little plots of land were. And then every year they would build a house and then turn around and sell the house. They bought the land really cheap. Wow. Had it all done. And so my first forte into it was, hey, I got to go into construction in high school, learn about shop drawings for the first month and go out and literally build the house. And they would sub out all the finish work, but all the masonry was done by the masonry department, the electrical done by the electrical crew. And we'd do all the framing and everything and built an entire house. So we got to learn, you know, at the age of 16, I got to go in and, you know, go through and deal with the building inspector and all of that kind of fun stuff. So that was my very first thing into the forte of construction was, hey, go learn that in high school, build a house in high school.
Wow. Like that really makes me just want to pause and reflect about sometimes the days can be long, but how short the years are, where you talk about at 16 years old, how you found that passion about being in the wood shop, but they actually were doing business in the school of like real world execution. So what is the story that led you to finding and using BIM or building informational modeling? Because you'd think everybody knows what BIM stands for, but it's amazing when you get out of the silos, how we're really starting to put those tools out there. So what is the story that led you to finding and using BIM in your work?
Well, as a nerd, as a kid, right, I was into computers. You know, I was into DOS-based programming. You know, I got into computers way before Windows even existed. And when you start going and working anywhere in the industry back in the early 90s, if you're a person who knew computers, people just were making you do things that you didn't know you wanted to do or maybe didn't care to do. But so for me, I was actually working in a woodworking shop. So when I was doing framing, did not like framing in Colorado in the winter. So I got out of that and became an architectural millworker. And when I was there, they're like, wait, you know computers. We hate the guys doing our shop drawings. Can you go learn this AutoCAD thing and do all of our shop drawings for us? So my boss sent me to a couple semesters of AutoCAD sessions at the local community college. I only took one semester because I realized very quickly I learned more than the teacher could actually teach me. So I was just this computer geek, always learning thing. I learned Lisp routines really quick. And so from there, it was like, oh, we're now in the woodworking industry. Let's go ahead and buy some computerized equipment. You know computers, learn how to do all that. And then ironically, after a few years of like 8 or 9 years of being a woodworker, I had an architect try to recruit me because they liked what I was doing. And so they recruited me and started getting more into the design side. And then I went through a move and ended up moving next to somebody who was an Autodesk reseller. And that was right about the time Autodesk acquired Revit. And I saw Revit going, oh my God, this is my CNC computer background, my construction background put into a nice little piece of software, right? All the parametrics and things. I was doing that with CNC programming, you know, 5-10 years earlier. So it's like, that just kind of put it all together going, wow, this Revit thing is pretty cool. It's my life history put into a piece of software. So I just picked up on Revit and geeked out on it.
Well, I really appreciate that lead in, right? As we're, you truly were learning by doing, right? And then you're being able to adopt and put that stuff into this. So I'd be really curious if you can give us some of the interesting stories about the industry's kind of this early adoption of BIM from your perspective of kind of go back at the beginning, since we have the luxury of someone who's kind of been doing it before, it's now the new in cool thing.
Yeah, it's funny. I was making a little joke that I was doing BIM before anybody knew what BIM was, right? Because back in the early 90s, like I said, at the woodworking firms, the one firm I went to, it was a pretty sophisticated firm, realizing, man, we've got to keep up, right? And back then, all the CNC and all the computerized equipments were coming out. They were starting to get into QR codes. Again, I'm talking early 90s here, QR codes and all these things. So we bought the CNCs and I had to learn how to do CNC programming. That original CNC program is like, oh, here's a typical cabinet size. But if it's 2 inches bigger, I need new things to adjust. So back then I started realizing, well, wow, I can make these things parametric. So I can just have the guy on the shop floor change the length and the width and everything would adjust and would add more holes and do what it needed to do based off of that. So once we got that aspect of it down, we ended up buying a program. I think the program was called Pattern Systems, but it was built on top of AutoCAD where you would do 3D models of your cabinets. And then those 3D models would pull up, or you would not pull up automatically with a lot of behind the scenes stuff. For me, it was, oh, if I put this cabinet down and said this cabinet has a lock or whatever, it would change the programs that I had already pre-made up when you did it. So you were doing 3D modeling back in the days. It was hilarious. We did 3D models, but only printed out 2D drawings for our architects and the shop drawings. So we did all of that, but then it would go to the CNC machines and pull it up. We did not get advanced into the barcode things. That was something that my boss was looking into, but just thought it would be too much. So it could even then have spit out a barcode for the computerized saws and everything like that. And then I went from that firm to another firm who did have the computerized saws. But again, for them, they had just bought it all. They had moved from this tiny shop where they were literally doing everything by hand. Even their shop drawings were pencil drawn. I'm like, hey, we're building a new shop. We're going to get into this AutoCAD thing and all computerized equipment. Can you come work for us? Because we know you're doing that over there for this firm. And it was like, oh, sure. You're like 3 miles from my house rather than 30. I'm good with that.
Well, and all those touch points, right? You started by in shop class to then say, oh, you actually know how to use this computer. but you're connecting that shop to the office, right? And we're always talking about connecting the field to the office, and you have to be able to put yourself in the other person's shoes, right?
Yeah.
And so the part that I really want to expand upon is that is BIM just for architects and large commercial general contractors? And that's a very loaded question that we're going to go down this conversation today, because I think that's what a lot of people think. What's your take to that?
I think, you know, for me, I don't even call it BIM. I just call it information modeling, because everybody thinks when you start throwing the term building out there, you get these subs or these small contractors saying, you know what, for me, it's not about the building. It's about the information we can extract from that. Right. And so, you know, yes, I'm a consultant. I work with, you know, tiny firms who do little patio sunroom additions to firms who build, you know, airports and courthouses and, you know, big old concert halls, et cetera. So I see the gamut of it. And to me, it's more about what information is in there and how can you pull that data out? Like in one project, I was laughing, my architectural client, they were using like Rhino for something and they were using Excel as the information platform, right? Everybody thinks BIM is Revit or ARCHICAD or these great huge tools, but Excel is the biggest information tool we have in our industry. Everybody has access to it. Everybody can use it. It's one of those tools.
Because your finance people, the people that are not architects, are used to that, right?
So and even a lot of, you know, so like for me, when I was in the woodworking firm, all of our shop drawings, we did them in, or not shop drawings, excuse me, all of our cut sheets were done in Excel. All of our pricing was done in Excel. We plug in numbers, we had Excel formulas to do all that. So if you have that data, can you start communicating to maybe the designers or whatever to start pulling that information in as well, right? So BIM isn't always about a building. It could be about the information we're extracting from a model.
So that's fascinating. You're the first person I've ever said, like, I'm careful to use the B in BIM. It's just information modeling. And then it's all about this data management. So that really is, that's really insightful to think through. Be careful about the acronyms of, because now it's the AECO and you got to be all of those, right? Well, maybe not. The riches are in the niches, right? And figuring out how that information is transferred, because above that is all about communication to build better buildings, right? And you say, I'm in a consulting practice, like talk through that, what you do. And you said small shops to big shops, but if I'm hearing you right, you're saying, okay, I have a life of BIM, but let's really just talk about how the information fits into your business and help me consult from the ground up, but not just starting from a clean slate. Let's pick up with what you're doing and how we can improve on that. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, the thing is, everybody hears these terms and things. Nobody ever looks at the baby steps, right? We've always got these tiny little baby steps. You know, I was out with a fabricator in Montana, and they were a log home builder. So they would design and do these log homes. And I was, you know, I'm a Revit geek. That's what I do. So I was showing him in Revit, and I was showing him how we could tie all this data to it. So as they went through and did this little design, we had all pricing set up for them. And it even cracked me up, because when my background came in, I'm like, oh, well, the example I always use, they had like 18-inch log pricing and 12-inch log pricing and 10-inch log pricing, right? And the size of the logs, it's obviously, you know, older growth. It's not as, it's more sparse. So we charge more for the sizes. But I sat looking at it, I'm going, but if I went from 18 inches to an 8-inch log, I'm now using three times as many logs. How do you guys price that? And they're like, we don't really. I mean, you know, it was just one of those things. Let's take the data you're doing and add to that. And again, we're doing that through Revit. And like, that's cool, but we do all of this over here in Excel. I'm like, well, great. That's all in Revit. If you still want to do it in Excel, let's export that data out to Excel to get you what you need. So it's always this thing is everybody just keeps thinking like, oh, it's this building model, but no, it's the information. And how can we exchange that information? It's a big thing for me. You know, and one of my giant projects was Miami Beach Convention Center I was working on. And the design architect, like I said, they were going from Rhino to Revit using Excel. And then the contractor was literally going, there's all these crazy fins and panel systems. The contractor was going into AutoCAD and putting a point at every single one of these fins, then trying to extract out the XYZ data of every those points. I'm like, contractor, we have an Excel spreadsheet that's 20 pages long of that data. And they're like, wait, what? And so we gave that to them, like, you just saved us 2 months worth of work. And all it was a simple question of, how are you guys doing this on my end? For the contractor to say, well, here's what we're doing. It's like, yeah, you don't need to. We have that data, that information for you. In the end, it's not a building model. It's an Excel spreadsheet of data.
Great. So Excel, everyone's heard of that, right? And by this point, I hope the whole Art of Construction tribe at least knows what Revit is, because Revit has been, you know, through the Autodesk world of kind of this vein, and they're the big 800-pound gorilla. So Revit is that main BIM tool. And you've thrown out a couple other names. Can you walk us through the library of tools that you work with and kind of talk through the different uses on projects around that, you know, 800-pound gorilla, if you will?
Well, the thing for me is I'm a Revit geek. That's the software I know. I used to know AutoCAD. And again, that's the thing that cracks me up, is everybody thinks AutoCAD is not a building information modeling tool. Again, it's not about the modeling. It's about the information exchange. So AutoCAD can be there, right? I did pattern systems in the 90s in DOS-based AutoCAD. That was our BIM platform back then. But you've got SolidWorks, you've got Rhino. It's whatever tool you're doing that you can extract data out of, right? It's all about the information. So sure, in the United States, Revit's 800-pound gorilla. You go to Europe, a lot of more people use ARCHICAD, right? A lot more designers in the early on stages use Rhino for the freeform massing and panelization and things like that. And all these tools are great, but if you can't exchange that data or get that information going from one to the other, they're all pointless, right? Because information modeling is a process, not a tool. So the whole process is, how can we get that data of all these points of these panels to the contractor for them to use easily? So it's just reworking that flow into the people, the end users as well, like, you know, the log manufacturer for me. Hey, how can we get this into your Excel spreadsheet or into your data or whatever you're using to extract that for you to use on your day-to-day basis?
I love that. And this next question has been a roller coaster that I have a lot to catch up on, but it's been fascinating as I'm, you know, I own a window and door company in Colorado. So we're working with several window manufacturers to understand how you can implement and work with manufacturers to put these models into the right hands to truly begin with the end in mind. And we talk a lot with podcasts like Trimble. We're talking about, how do we build from one source of truth? So the question I'm really curious for you to expound upon, and from your point of view, are building product manufacturers implementing BIM the right way? Because isn't that the secret sauce that makes BIM work industry-wide if we're really going to say we're going to build from this digital twin point of view?
Yeah, and that's always a very tough question, right? Because when you get into how are we using this, you know, single source of truth for everybody to use, everybody's using it in a different way, right? And this is one thing that drives me crazy in the industry, is everybody thinks in their Revit or the architectural modeling practice, we need to model exactly what we're going to see that's going to be fabricated. And I think, no, you don't. We were starting to get away in this industry from the design intent. So I want to give you, here's roughly where I need this curtain wall to use. Here's my idea, or in your case, the window or door. Here's my idea of how big this door leaf is going to be. You tell me how big the rough opening, et cetera, needs to be, right? And even in that scenario, every door manufacturer might be different. Oh, you might have a slightly different anchor for that. So I just need to tell you my design intent is a 3 foot wide, a 2 foot wide, whatever door. Then you need to tell a contractor, if you're using our door, here's your rough opening, right? And so that's the thing that everybody, that just blows me away, is everybody thinks like, oh, the design model is going to be perfect and exact. And it's like, no, because the contractor is going to use you because they like you as your door supplier. The other contractor, oh, we get them custom fabricated from Joe's garage and he builds it slightly different. So we can't ever have all of this. So that information and that design intent, we've got to understand that, hey, this is what we want it to be, but what you need to do as a contractor, what you need to do as a sub, what you need to do as a manufacturer, that's the data we need to pull across.
Yeah, and each project has to have that one source of truth, but it has to be this loose leaf thing that you have to have the right specialty or trusted advisors coming in that are working with the handoffs, right, to build this thing up. Can you talk about some of the more everyday or unexpected uses of Revit that our audience may appreciate when you're expanding upon, be careful about, you know, rigid lines or unexpected things that you've been doing this, like the log home manufacturer. Anything else you'd give us some light on that?
Well, one of the things I actually taught this at AU a few years ago in conjunction with one of my clients is, you know, kind of this exact same thing. So there was this very, it was a courthouse, and I don't remember which courthouse it is, but it was a curved wall facade. So it was a giant curved wall, you know, it's like 200 feet long or something, but it was curved on the face. The top was sloping, the ends were sloping, the bottom is sloping, nothing was, you know, sloping together. But we sat down with the contractor and the fabricator early on and said, okay, what data can we give you? We're going to model this as accurate as we can for a designer to give you our design intent. And then that was, again, another one of those ones that, like, we just want to know where the center line of the reveals are at the top and bottom of the wall and horizontally going across. Because right. if we have that, then we can extract the data we need to. We can fill out what gaps we need, what reveals we need, et cetera. So we knew what our design intent was. So again, same kind of concept as that, as we, fortunately, this was a large enough project, we're able to work with the contractor, the sub, all the way down to the fabricator to say, okay, here's the data you need. Let us give you that data so we can all make sure this works together. There were still some issues on site, but for the majority of the part, it saved everybody a ton of work, saved the architect a ton of work from trying to document it, answering RFIs, and wait, this is documented properly. This is the data we need.
Yeah, so that was one of those. Now with supply chain, with radius walls, like all of our projects like that, you have to be able to order this way out in front. So you have to figure out these critical points of data to then be able to have the other team within the team working together so that it all comes back together to where the building envelope on a radius all comes together. That's a key part of what you're talking about there.
Yeah. Yeah. That too. And so that to me is one of those like everyday uses. It's one of those things that I always try to go into, you know, any software company gets out there, you know, Autodesk, I don't care who it is. They start showing you all the cool features you can do. Oh, look, we designed this crazy twisty blah, blah, blah building. And that's cool. But less than 0.1% of the design people in the world are doing crazy twisty buildings like that. Right. Sure. So how can we try to figure the software and some of these features that they give us to do these crazy twisty design things to do what we need to do? And on that particular one, it was all about Revit and adaptive components and getting those to do what we needed them to do to extract the data out from a contractor. So I know this year at DBI, I'm doing just everyday Revit tips, because for me, I'm in the software and I do something, people are like, oh, wait, what did you just do there? And it's just, to me, it's those things that I do on a daily basis that maybe somebody else can benefit from. But I've done it.
So if I'm hearing you right, instead of doing the 1% building you may or may not ever build, actually be built, instead of build with a D, it's built with a T. You're talking about the things that you're going to use that are built over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. And just, you know, just trying to find it, you know, I've been an end user, right? You know, as we talked about, I was an end user. So for me, there's those things that I see people doing and struggling with, like, and they spend 10 hours doing something, like, oh, wow, did you realize you could do this, this, and this, and probably break that down to 30 minutes. So for me, it's all about increasing productivity or trying to get people to understand there's other ways to do things. And that's why, you know, over the years, I've deemed everyday uses of, and I just try to find a tool within the Revit platform to help the day-to-day uses out.
Love it. Well, can you give us a little bit more conversation around your involvement and what is Digital Build Week from your point of view? Because you've been involved with it globally for quite a while now, right?
Yeah. So I love the origin story of it. It's actually based out, it actually started in Australia. In Australia, Revit had a bigger buy-in than I think in the States before it was bought out by Autodesk, when it was owned by Charles River Software. And they had a little user group, and the little user group decided, hey, instead of meeting monthly, let's do this big shindig at the year. You know, big shindig was like probably 30 people. And that was back in there. And then it just started growing. And I saw it in Australia. But at that time, I worked for an Autodesk reseller, and Revit was kind of new, and they wouldn't justify, you know, paying for me to go out to Australia. I tried really hard, but I couldn't get them to justify sending me to Australia. So when they did the very first one in Huntington Beach about, I think it was 11 years ago, I was like, yes, I am going to go to this, because Revit is the software of the future for the United States, I thought. And it's like, so I want to be there. So I just started, you know, being there. I was, you know, one of the speakers there the very first year. I've spoken at every North American, and I've spoke one internationally every year, with the exception of COVID years. And so I go to all of those. My wife became part of Digital. She's on the committee, Digital Belt Week. Back then, it was called the Revit Technology Conference, which was focused specifically on Revit. Now they've expanded a little bit, and they keep trying to find their niche, because for them, they also realized they didn't want to be Revit related. They're trying to get more about that information and the technology. And also calling it Revit Technology Conference. Like I said, in Europe, Revit's not as big as it is in the United States or even Australia. So over there, they do a lot more stuff using other software. US, it's pretty much mostly Revit based. They do talk about some other things as well, but that's really the big thing on the conference here. And then they did build it out to Digital Built Week, where they're now adding more things to it rather than just the Revit conference. They're trying to add in some of the other type of conferences with it. But I'm kind of an honorary person. I volunteer. I give them help, because I know it's, you know, all volunteer based type stuff, and it's all not profit. So kind of one of those things that helps better the environment.
I appreciate that, and appreciate, you know, all the information that you've put into keeping this abreast and keeping it going. And Art of Construction is honored to be here to help facilitate these stories, because it's been really fun getting to hear all the origin stories and go listen to the other podcasts where we're tying this all together, just like we did back in 2019. It's been really fun to continue to hear these kind of origin stories of how it got here. And it's when they say weak and all this stuff, I commend the whole team of putting this together because there's so much information as we're talking about, and not just the 800 pound gorilla, but the different parts about how we can all work together. So as we talk about that, I want to talk about how we can break down another one of these acronyms that we're all trying to figure out of where we run in the riches and the niches and everyday uses of the AECO, architectural, engineering, construction, and operations of these silos, and get more collaboration between the architects, contractors, and affiliates. What is your perspective on how we can really do that through this lens?
You know, for me, this is a tough one in the United States market. I see this happening more and more in other parts of the world. In the US, we, you know, unfortunately, and I don't know if this is unfortunate or fortunately, we're all about liability and lawyers. So everybody's so worried about pointing fingers and getting sued and seeing what's going on that it really, really does put a hindrance on it. If it's a larger project, usually some people will try to build some money into it and add some money to the projects to get it. But in a lot of the smaller stuff where there's probably not even that much liability, everybody's still afraid of it. So it's sad to me. Like when I don't know, it was probably 10 years ago, I found out that in, I forget which country it was, maybe it was the Netherlands, that the architects are also responsible for construction safety. That in the architectural drawings, they have to show tie-off zones as the building's being built. They have to show, the civil engineers have to show, hey, this is going to be a deep hole. You need to make sure you don't dig it properly. Because if anybody gets injured or, God forbid, dies on a job, everybody is liable. So there's none of this finger pointing. It's all, hey, how can we work together on this? And until we start getting that in the US market, unfortunately, it sounds like a Debbie Downer here, but unfortunately, until then, I don't really see these silos really coming to be more collaborative. Unless, you know, the building owners say, hey, this is a requirement, therefore there is no finger pointing.
And it all boils down to communication. And at the end of the day, you have to, when we say what is the root one source of truth, is to protect everybody on the project. And I think you have to look at, doesn't matter how big the project is, you have to have everybody coming together. And that's where I love the term the master architect or the master facilitator of that master of, we're all going to do it this way. So that we can all not, like, we're all going to put our hands in the center to work together instead of how we all hands off to protect ourselves.
Yeah.
Which I think is a key part that we just have to continue to hit on. And this is not one thing that just happens overnight. And that's where, you know, it's truly an honor to have you on the podcast. You and I have transferred over the different years of coming from here and there. And at the end of the day, we're trying to just really help build better buildings, but in an easier way, right? And it gets frustrating and when you see how people, how they may or may not do stuff. And so this podcast is one of those platforms that we just, a lot of the stuff is the regurgitating or continuing to talk about the same things to just remember to say, hey, let's just look at it this way. We're all in this together. You also have a tool for that, right? Can you talk through your platform of Revit Radio for us?
Yeah. So way back when I was a geek, and you know, this is when Revit was kind of in infancy. I think I started it in 2006. It might've been 8, but it was a while ago. I just decided, you know, nobody has a platform to ask questions about Revit. So back then I worked for an Autodesk reseller, and my cohort there were like, you know, let's create a webcast called Revit Radio. And literally all it is people ask questions and I answer them. So it's kind of like a live question and answer, live tech support, whatever you want to call it. And I've just been doing this over the years. I took a hiatus for a while when I left the reseller and there was a whole, well, we own Revit Radio. You can't do that. So there was, again, finger pointing happening at that point in time. But for me, it's just about, you know, obviously I need to make a living. We all need to make a living. But if we can all better the industry benefits as a whole. And this is my way to try to help better the industry. So it's Revit Radio. I do it the first Tuesday of every month. Been doing it for a long time. Finally, this year, somebody conned me into recording and posting them. I had not done that because I'm not a politically correct person. And sometimes when you're answering questions on the fly, you sit there, you wake up and they're like, oh, that was a terrible way to answer that question. So I didn't want that to be, you know, but I'm like, whatever, I am who I am. So it's kind of what it is. That's my thing. And I will say I'm not doing it the first Tuesday of next month because I want to do it live from Digital Belt Week. So I'm going to be doing it live from there. So I'm going to push it back a week so I can actually do it live while I'm there. Give people kind of that experience who don't get to go as well.
Awesome. Well, we commend you for doing that. And we'll make sure to put links in the show notes. So all of us who are figuring out how we can integrate Revit into our business, what a great tool. And we commend you for doing that. And Mackie Consulting is your business platform that you can help with all those different parts, right?
Yep. Yeah. So I'm a consultant here. It's funny for me. I got tired of working for an honest reseller because, you know, back in 10 years ago, people like, oh, well, you can't answer my questions. You just work for a reseller. They all thought you had basic knowledge. So going out on my own, let people say, oh, we can ask you more advanced questions because you're on your own now, which I've never understood that concept. But I took advantage of it and created a business. So I'm happy about it.
That's fascinating, though, you say that, right? Like, and just a lot for us to think about it, to say, how do we actually break down these silos and build better buildings? Because we all, boy, we can be jaded by what we think we know, and we don't know what we don't know, right? And I think there's some validity to that. If you're in this box of what you're selling, people are going to automatically assume if you're there to help them, you're there to help them to sell that product.
Yeah.
Versus productization of this general platform. And I think there's a lot of those conversations around both of those.
Yeah. And it's like you said, trying to figure out how it fits for each person. And I've been people, I'm like, yeah, I would not purchase Revit if I were you. I would go purchase this cheaper product. You know, I know I'm not going to get any work out of you from this, but in reality for you, this is a better tool, right? We're all just trying to, you know, make this industry better. And, you know, I also think that I would love to be an Excel consultant, but there's so many of those people out there, because I just really think we need to push more of the construction and design industry. Hey, Excel is an information modeling tool. It's just lines of data, information modeling.
There's a lot of validity to that for sure. Yeah. And figuring out how they all come together. Right. And we've had a lot of podcasts recently in talking about, like, don't automate a crappy product. Don't go out and spend a bunch of money that you're just this tool, Revit or any tool, is just going to save my business. Could actually go the other direction if you're not ready to adopt that different platform, right?
Absolutely.
And I think that's what you're saying about, it's not that Revit's a bad tool. Revit is an amazing tool, but you better have a platform ready to maximize and utilize that, right?
And it's not the right tool for everyone, right? It's the right tool for me because that's what I make my profession on, but it's not the right tool for everybody. So it's always about finding the right tool. It's kind of like I always said, if you're a contractor, would you go buy a really, really expensive nail gun if you only put in 20 nails a year? No, you're going to use a hammer.
I love it. Well, what is your crystal ball for the future of technology and construction?
Oh, you know, it's funny for me. I think a lot of it, and you're starting to see it come down. You know, I'm currently going through a large landscaping project on my house. And it is funny to me how I always hear designers and people say, well, no, everybody just needs a printed set of drawings. Yet every single one of my landscapers was using their cell phone to look at the drawings that they had. They weren't actually printing drawings. So to me, I think a lot of obviously it's more of the technology, but I think there's going to be a lot more of the data you're getting and how to assign data to different things, like either PDFs or where I think it's going to be going is a lot of point clouds. I think a lot of stuff's going to be, hey, we can just scan things and add data to those points where we can just extract that data and come through. But again, it's also still, where is that single source of truth and how do we get everything to talk? And I don't have an answer for that one.
Well, but you jump in and you work together, right? So if you've never done any of what he's talking about, then you should reach out to Brian Mackie of Mackie Consulting and say, he could be able to look at to say, how do you eat this elephant? One bite at a time, right? And it may just be getting tweaked with Excel or this, but building, like you talked about the log home example, and every cause has an effect. Yes, old growth on your logs, but yet if you're shrinking the logs, you need more logs. So what's the trade-off that we're trying to figure out? At the end of the day, the true art of construction is the art of moving money. It's the art of business, right? And so we're moving this around in efficiencies. And that's what my experience of your talks and the things I've learned from you, I picked up on a lot of that kind of stuff of just make sure you're looking at how to take the right bites out of that elephant to move it forward. So as we close this out, what is that one thing you want to leave our contractors and affiliates to think about to go out there and crush it and grow their business? And I'm super excited to be seeing you in person soon at Digital Built Week, because it's been a long couple of years, but productive ones nonetheless, as we continue to craft the art of construction.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to the in-person too. We're actually decided to do a road trip on the way out there, so it'll be kind of fun.
Oh, fun.
But I think the big thing for me is for the contractors and affiliates to grow their business. Yeah, a lot of it to me, it's the open lines of communication and don't fear technology. You know, in technology in any shape or form, it cracks me up. Like I remember when nail guns first came out, I'm that old and people were like, no, we don't need to go buy this. You know, they were expensive, $800 nail gun to put in nails. Look, I can put them in efficiently with this. And how many contractors you see who don't own a nail gun anymore? So just adopt technology in any way, just figure out the proper way that that technology can help your business.
I love it. Brian, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story.
I appreciate it a lot, Devin, and it was a pleasure to be here, and I'll be seeing you in a few weeks.
Awesome. So Tribe, I love his analogy of the nailer, because I was actually on a system build job site last week in Wisconsin. And I was standing there, and when Brian was telling the story, I was thinking the same story where I did a presentation like 5 years ago. And it was just, you know, I say I'm a micro influencer and most of the time a disruptor. And I use a disruptor conversation that we talk about crusty contractor of the evolution of putting a nail on the roof by being safe with it and just showing pictures of us warriors all working together. When I was there last week, it wasn't the conversation was, well, we were using brand A and we were struggling with it. But when we went to brand B with all of our, everything was battery powered for all of putting their system built walls and nailing the whole house in a day, I was like, man, we've come a long way in a really, really, really good way. So we have to look at those things to say, don't just change to change, but when it's right to adopt it. And I raise my hand and say, I think a lot of it is the leadership to say, I'm not going to invest in that tool. They have a phone and they'll just use it. So I think about that when he says the warriors in the fields are looking at their tiny little phone when we should be giving and equipping the lead carpenters with the right digital device to point them in the right direction. And however you need to get pointed, find your Mackie Consulting if you need help in Revit or what those tools are. And I can tell you, Tribe, the place where I have met Brian Mackie and so many really cool people that have really helped me break through my own ceilings and you, the Art of Construction Tribe, that's through platforms like Digital Built Week. So I challenge you, if you're not going to be there, and I pushed hard for you, Tribe, to say, hey, maybe some people can't afford it or can't do that. So let's give them an option. And one of those options is giving away free passes to Digital Built Week in Anaheim this June 14th to the 16th. And so just go to our webpage, theaoc.us, and have a link to win there and reach out to the show notes. Brian and I are here to help. Just one touch point for you to go out there and build better buildings and crush it. And by the way, don't forget to have as much fun as possible. And I hope I get to cheers you, whether it's Digital Build Week or somewhere out there where we are all figuring out how to have the right tablets with the right nail guns, whatever that is, to go back to your Excel document and have as much fun as possible to build better buildings. Crush it out there, Tribe.